Welcome to the Fuller Tracing Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 6th of March, and I'm recording at 9:38 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, just a couple of comments here on the week, which has had some interesting developments. As far as stock markets are concerned, they remain generally steady. But China, since it came back from holidays that we saw last week, mostly during last week, has been a little bit soft, but it was up near the higher side. The indices were up near the higher side of their ranges and a little bit overbought prior to the holidays. And indeed, there are a lot of stock markets which have done really quite well in here, which are overbought in the short term and or slightly overextended in the short term and are susceptible to some mean reversion. And that includes some of the European indices that have had a very, very good run here, particularly the European Union indices. And this is partly due to a the buying time, at least 4 months in terms of the Grexit issue. And the other factor here is, and the more important factor, is that this is the month in which Mario Draghi starts his QE, and it'll be to the tune of 60 billion euros per month until the end of September 2006, or longer if necessary. A lot of people are saying, well, what will he buy? You know, the European bond yields are so low, and Draghi is saying that, well, he'll drive them into negative territory if need be. And clearly this is going to go on a long way, and QE has lit a fuse under these European stock markets, just as it did for Wall Street when it started all those years ago, and continued to lift markets while the QE was still in play. We can remember it came in three stages, because a couple of times they suspended the purchases and stock markets started to weaken, so they started them right up again. And therefore, Draghi's in for the long haul on this. And we also have the same thing going on in Japan, and that has certainly pushed that stock market up. So they're the informed markets. And as I look at my screens here today, I can see that while the US is to the plus side on the year, only marginally, barely changed on the Dow. The S&P is up less than a percentage point, and it's up 2/3 of a percentage point, less than 2/3 of a percentage point. And the Nasdaq, which has been red hot, well, it's only up 4%. And just about every European and Asian market has outperformed them. And I'm talking about in US dollars as well. Well, what are the reasons for that? And obviously, it's valuations in the US that are higher than elsewhere, and this US dollar is a growing headwind, and had another big surge in here today. And the reason for that is that the February employment figures were very attractive. So unemployment fell, I think, to 5.5%, and the new jobs were well ahead of estimates. A lot of people, in terms of commenting on what the figures would be, that's really a mug's game, as you'll be well aware. But they were estimating a lower figure because of some of the adverse weather conditions in the U.S. and the shale oil layoffs and so on. Well, they came in at very attractive figures. So that triggered another jump to the upside in U.S. 10-year Treasury bond yields, up to 2.245 5%, 2.245% for the U.S. 10-year Treasury. So that's broken up out of the recent trading range of the last 3 weeks plus that was on either side of the 2% level. And it's the best rally since 2013. And it's another good bounce off the region of the trough that we saw in 2012 on the U.S. Treasuries. And if that sounds like base development to you, you're right. Or certainly, in my opinion, you are right. Well, Wall Street had a knee-jerk reaction to the downside from its overbought conditions, and we saw some big numbers here today. But I'll just give you the percentages. The Dow had the biggest fall, down 1.54%. S&P 1.42%. NASDAQ composite 1.11%. But those are still big hits. And they're downward dynamics, and they've rolled over and are not maintaining the latest upward breakouts. Now, there's nothing too sinister about all that, because they were overbought in the short term. February was a great month to the upside. They pushed all the way back up, and most of the indices through to new highs. And then have failed to hold those levels, but we've seen that on a number of occasions over the last year or more. And the point overall is that these indices are still to the left of their rising 200-day moving averages. They were somewhat overextended, but again, we saw a couple of small downside weekly key reversals in here on U.S. indices, so it looks like we're going to get a little bit of mean reversion at least, and that's certainly what I expect here in the short term. And on these bond yields, well, that ought to be raising a few eyebrows, that U.S. Treasury figure that I just quoted. Now, you've got to remember, you've got a bull market of about 35 years here, and extended by the financial crisis of 2008. And people are a little bit complacent in that market, quite possibly. They're entitled to be, mind you. They've had, or it's understandable, I should say. I don't think anybody's entitled to be complacent. But they're understandably complacent because they've done very well on a total return basis. this is the most overextended bull market in the world today. And again, the surprises, I think, over the next few years in government bonds will be to the upside. And I know I thought that we might see that upward pressure earlier on than has actually been the case. There is definite evidence there's definite case to be made here. And I think there are a lot of misreadings. First, you've got a lot of people who have huge profits, and so they're probably overextending those holdings. It's very tempting to actually do that, because you're not seeing any profit erosion. Well, in the U.S. market, they are beginning to experience some profit erosion. Not all that dramatic, but you get up above 3%, and I know that's a long way away. That's 3/4 of a point here, but that's the direction we're heading in my opinion. And also, I think people have been feeling that deflationary pressures would keep these bond yields at extremely low levels, but a lot of that deflation, as I've been pointing out, and not that many other people are picking up on this, but I think it's certainly true. A lot of it's very positive deflation. It's created by technology. And it's not the destructive deflation. So that's a key point which I think people need to actually take on board. And then there are other people saying that, well, the US bond yields can't really go up because German bond yields, well, they're below 0.4%. So they're at 0.39% here right now. It's unbelievably low. But yes, new buyers who wanted to have bonds, they'd say, well, I'll take US because you're getting at least 1.7% better yield there. But there are an awful lot more people holding those US Treasury bonds than there are potential new buyers. And if the holders get a little bit nervous about profit erosion, and I don't know anybody who doesn't get nervous about profit erosion, particularly if it starts to occur quickly, the surprises, as I say, over the next few years, surprises in these bond markets will be to the upside, and they're risky. This is the real bubble here. How might that affect stock markets? Well, if yields surge up very quickly, it can unnerve investors, particularly if stock markets are in an overbought position, which is the case here today. But overall, it's if anything, it's an additional bull factor for stock markets overall, because you get some switching from away from bonds into equities, and the yields won't rise sufficiently to become really competitive once again as the global economies recover. So that's the outlook that I see over the next few years. Global economies will be gradually recovering. That will roil the bond market somewhat. It'll cause volatility in stock markets, but still within the overall bull market trends for the most part. Now, I wouldn't want to have any of these government bonds. I've said that for a long time, while also tipping my proverbial hat to the people who have been in that market. They've enjoyed a fantastic bull market, but it can't go on forever unless you expect the world to be in a deflationary depression. And I think we're going to see a disinflationary recovery, and disinflationary largely because of global competition and particularly because of the accelerating rate of technological innovation. And I think that also creates an environment for stock markets, which is extremely bullish overall. I feel the potential, as I've said for several years now, is for a secular bull market. And the big drivers of that secular bull market will be, by far the most important one, is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And that just enables companies to operate vastly more efficiently. And that leads through to the bottom line. Companies are the biggest beneficiaries of all, but we consumers are benefiting from all this technology as well, in the we are able to buy more, ever more powerful computers and smartphones and tablets at generally lower costs here overall, and most of us would be lost without them. And they're certainly wonderful to have. So everyone benefits from the technology. Some people are affected if they lose their jobs. That's a problem that I've often mentioned. I won't dwell on it here right now, but it does create or put it this way, the technology takes over a number of jobs held by both blue collar and white collar workers, and it takes time for people and societies to come up with the new jobs to satisfy the employment needs of their citizens, although that will happen. But we've just never seen anything like this rate of technological innovation. But that's a big factor behind the overall bull trend, because the corporations are far and away the most obvious beneficiaries in terms of their overall efficiencies. Now, the other factor, which is a benefit of the technology, is lower energy prices in real terms. So you got solar coming on gangbusters, and when they start using graphene on those solar panels, the yield rate in terms of what their sunlight that they're actually able to capture will increase dramatically. And of course, graphene will have so many uses in so many fields, and we'll hear more and more about it as time goes on. But I think most investors are already well aware of what a miraculous product this is. That raises the question: how do you invest in graphene? Well, not by the companies that produce it, and with most new breakthrough technologies of this sort, it's look around to see who uses it most efficiently. Well, that'll be big corporations, and they're the ones who benefit the most from it. But again, everybody will benefit from it. So, technological acceleration, lower energy prices in real terms, that will be with us. And then there's the globalization. The fact that capitalism is by far the most dominant economic system, whether it's democratic capitalism, such as we have in most of the in the Western countries, or whether it's really command capitalism in the China version. But capitalism works better than the other approaches, as we've long known. And again, most of the world is operating on a capitalistic basis, where you go back to 1982, when the last secular bull market was getting underway, and that was definitely not the case. Okay, and also, bigger populations, the autonomies, such tremendous beneficiaries. You'll be very familiar with those stories, especially if you're among the veteran subscribers. Now, what about those bonds on a longer-term basis? Well, great bull markets, and this has certainly been a great bull market in government bonds, are followed by bear markets. I don't think it will quite wipe out the entire bull markets, not by a long shot. I don't think, in other words, we're not going to get back to the yields that we were seeing on bonds 35 years ago, when the big fight against inflation was taking place, charge being led by Paul Volcker and his kind. So I don't see a huge inflation crisis, at least for any sensible economy that's got a reasonably well managed or that's been governed on a reasonable basis. You get the exceptions, of course, the Zimbabwes, the Venezuelas, Russia, but fortunately, most of us live in countries where the economies are managed on a little bit better basis, and we're not going to see those same inflationary crises. There's always a bit of inflation because central banks, well, there's almost always a bit of inflation because central banks are after about 2% inflation a year. And you work that out, that's reduces the purchasing power of cash significantly over time. But we're not going to see anything like the double-digit inflation that was so widespread. I don't think we'll see that in the next 20 to 30 years. And I hope to be around to see whether I'm right or not in that forecast. Hopefully for at least the next 20 years. Okay, now, so just be careful. I would avoid the bond markets and be aware of the risks. Be aware of the risks there. Don't get shaken out of stock markets at this time. I think that yes, they'll be more volatile, but they're buys on setbacks overall, in my opinion. And for performance here in the short to medium term, overall, the best buys on setbacks, I think, are the countries where you're still getting, where you still have reasonable valuations and where you're still getting the very aggressive monetary policy to revive economies. Those are led by Japan and Europe, EU Europe. Okay, looking at currencies, the US has got a real headwind here on this strong dollar. The US dollar index here is up to 97.70. It's another big jump in here today. That's a new recovery high, and that's more pain for the US exporters. On the other hand, European Union exporters, you've got the euro, which has just plunged in the last couple of weeks. It's down to 1.0844. I'll repeat that, 1.0844. So think what that does for Germany. I mean, it makes them fantastically competitive overall. And that's going to be reflected in the earnings that these big autonomies, big European Union autonomies, they will do very well here over the next few years, relative to so many other shares. And among other currencies, that Australian dollar a little bit more competitive, 0.7716. Sterling, I'm quite competitive. It's close to that. Well, it's nearly 150, 1.5037, in here. I'll be interested to see at what stage the Fed starts to intervene to prevent the dollar from rallying too sharply. Well, at least I hope they do at some stage. Otherwise, I think it will create real problems. A nice, slow, steady recovery in a stronger economy's currency is to be expected, and it's really a sign of strength. It's helpful. It helps to keep inflation under control. But this has been moving up very sharply since last July, and countries are showing the wound. So be careful in that U.S. export sector that's vulnerable. And let's see, commodities. Well, they're still under a lot of pressure here. The most important one, of course, is still crude oil, and the Brent crude is back below that $60 level, or just barely, 59.82 here right now. The WTI is at 49.774. We're still getting a few ticks here in the late after hours trading. My feeling, I've said it many times, but we won't see any more big spikes to the upside. The last one, and it was the record numerically, was in 2000 and early 2008, and it was a big factor in the bear market that followed. Don't doesn't never didn't receive the credit that it ordinarily would have, because there was also a big fat financial crisis going on, and that's what made the economic recovery so elusive, because you had massive deleveraging by individuals and corporations, and of course that lowered tax receipts and for governments, and so you just had a stall. And quantitative easing came in, and it did cushion downward risks, and it was certainly kind to investors, and it was intended to be. The basic principle was that strong stock markets they weren't just hoping for strong stock markets, but it was obvious that a lot of that money would go into stock markets, and that would improve confidence, and it has, albeit slowly. Okay, looking at other commodities in here, precious metals. Well, that dollar is a big headwind. If you're buying them in euros, you're probably doing quite well. But I find the sector avoidable here. Unless we get a dramatic spike to the downside, that would surprise me a little bit, but anything's possible here in markets. But so any really big capitulation selling would create an opportunity. I've said for a while that they're reasonable value at these levels. That doesn't mean that they aren't going to go lower or that they're going to go up soon. That's just sort of a fundamental view, but they can do anything here in the short term, and with a very, very strong dollar, they're under pressure, and we see that here today. Palladium, least so. It's at $818, down 7 today. Silver more so, $15.88, down again today, and platinum has been the underperformer here recently, back down to $1,160. That's down $19 today. Gold down $31 to $1,167. The lower they go, the more interesting they actually look, but it'll have to be sharply lower to generate. I think a lot of interest. Climactic selling, that's what, if you don't hold the precious metals, that's what we'd like to see. Okay, did I finish on oil prices? I think that, again, you know the problem. It's too much supply, too much storage space, so it comes onto the market, and that's going to keep prices down. Yes, you'll get some supply cutbacks, and you'll get some uncertainties or production problems, and it can create little blips to the upside. But I think it's going to be very hard to get Brent crude back up above the say $70-$80 level, and it would be temporary, I believe. And agricultural commodities, well, prices are quite low. The crops are pretty good for the most part. There are always some exceptions, but we are on course here, hopefully for a second season, second consecutive season here of recently reasonably decent crops, but it's way too soon to say what will be happening with the U.S. crops, but and the European crops. But what a reasonably decent yields are the norm. The real problems are the exceptions, and hopefully we get reasonably favorable conditions. That would be good, but particularly for poorer people around the globe. But I emphasize, as I usually do, with those agricultural commodities, it's essentially a weather play, because demand changes incrementally, Weather can change yields dramatically, and thus it always was. And on that note, I think I've pretty well covered most of the topics of interest here. Metals, haven't t touched on the industrial metals. They're still soft here, moving lower. Again, technology is a big factor in this. Yes, I know China's not consuming as many metals as they have previously, but technology just the ability of just machines to operate so much of this production and so much more efficiently. So the stronger mines, the Rios and the Tintos, they're able to survive all this. They're not prospering here, that's clear, but over the longer term, they'll come out stronger. Rather than weaker, they'll have less competition and they'll be able to buy assets relatively cheaply overall. And there will, despite graphene and all these other miraculous products, there will still be demand for metals. But there we are. I think I've done a wrap on this. It's been an exciting week, and we'll look forward to more next week. And meanwhile, have an absolutely fantastic weekend. All the best to all of you.